The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
See my guy, Talen Horton Tucker? T-Boogie? Drop 18. Let me tell you something. There was a quote I saw from Frank Vogel last year saying, this year, Talen Horton Tucker might start for him. Think about that last season. Talen Horton Tucker might start for him. And you see why. Guys, do you understand? This happens sometimes. Like for the Knicks, it was John Starks back in the day. Is a guy who's just kind of like undrafted or second round pick, does he come out of nowhere and become the best player in the league? No. But you get all-stars sometimes. Draymond Green was in the second round. You got some second round picks who all of a sudden is like, damn, that guy can ball. Talen Horton Tucker. Even if he's just like a sixth man extraordinaire, like what do you think the basement for him is? What's the floor for him? A nice rotation piece, right? That's the floor. Guys, what's the ceiling? All-star? I mean, it's not just, I know he's doing it in the preseason and everything. You can eyeball it and see money can play. On 7-11, a 7-for-11 from the field, he drops 18. And that's not his best performance of the preseason. The rich get richer. LeBron James, Anthony Davis. No more Rondo, but you got, like, think about the surrounding pieces. There's no other all-star, right? But Montrezl Harrell's good. And Dennis Schroeder's very good. And Marc Gasol can still play. And Talen Horton Tucker can play. And KCP. Fits in very nicely. You know, KCP has such a well-rounded, he's a skill set, but none of those skills are pitched so high that he's actually a good starter in the NBA. But he's a valuable rotation piece. You know, he is a guy who can get his own shot, who can shoot from three, who can do a lot of things. If he's your sixth man or he's a floor spacer, that's kind of, He's a little overqualified just for one of those jobs, but he can do them. Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So James Harden speaks. How long will he be in Houston? Here's James Harden. You still trying to be traded, James?
Right now I'm just focused on being here. You know, today was good. Yesterday felt really good being out there the first time in since the bubble. I haven't really had an opportunity to do a lot of 5-on-5 work, but for my first time being out there, I think I felt pretty good. So,
James Harden hasn't been shy about eating, I'll tell you that much, in the offseason. Homeboy came in a little chunky. But James Harden kind of got that old man, fat man game, right? Fat dude at the Y just bust everybody.
Remember Harden, Paul Pierce towards the end? He was a little chunky, but he could still get to that elbow and kill you with that jump.
Yeah, Harden just got the... But when I say that YMCA game, like, Harden got that overall old man game that'll just kill you. Not like he's jumping out the gym.
For sure.
But, he gives a non-response response. This is clearly what's going on. Harden's trying to force his way out. KP was yelling at me on First Take today. Kendrick Perkins. Max, I talked to three GMs around the league who said they wonder about him, about team chemistry and this and that. And KP and Stephen A were using that to argue that that's bad for Harden. I'm trying to explain to them. It's supply and demand. This is simple. If there are fewer buyers, Harden's price goes down. If Harden's price goes down as a tradable asset, if the price for Harden falls with fewer buyers, that means it's easier to trade him. People are like, oh, because they're not going to trade him unless they're going to trade him. Of course, Tillman Fertitta. You think Tillman Fertitta can keep a malcontent who's not going to put his heart and soul into the team on the team and pay him $35 million a year or whatever he's doing? No, he's going to have to deal him. Unless out of spite, Fertitta wants to keep him on the team. You can cut off your nose to spite your face, I suppose, and feel like you win because you don't lose as much as the other person. I understand that philosophy. I subscribe to it sometimes. Sometimes you're going to take an L. But at least if someone else takes a worse L than you, in a way you lose. Or you win and they lose. Maybe Fertitta's thinking that. All right, I might have to take an L here. Harden's going to take a bigger L than me. But actually, Harden's in a position to make Fertitta take a bigger L than Harden. It's just going to be a mess, right? No, it's not going to happen. No, it's not going to get to that. What's going to happen is they're going to trade him. Now, listen to what I'm saying. The more GMs feel he's a malcontent and he's a distressed ass and everything, the lower the price will be for him in a trade, because fewer buyers means a lower price. Simple supply and demand. More buyers, because the commodity is a one of one, James Harden. So the more buyers you have, the supply goes down, the demand goes up. The price goes up. Duh. The fewer buyers you have, since it's only one, it's a commodity of one, the quantity is one, fewer buyers, demand goes down, price goes down. In other words, the Rockets will get less for him as time goes on, if there are fewer and fewer buyers. Here's another way to think about it. Today, if you consider what's happening with Harden bad news, right, and more GMs, increasingly GMs, are saying, we don't want this guy on our team. Is Daryl Morey a little happier this morning or a little sadder? Is he a little happier that there are fewer buyers on Harden or sadder? Daryl Morey, a rival GM, formerly of the Rockets, of course, who identified Harden as a superstar before he was considered that and traded for him. Daryl Morey, head of basketball operations for the Philadelphia 76ers, who seem to be one piece away from winning a championship. Daryl Morey, who has Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and doesn't want to give up either one for James Harden, but I'm sure would love Harden on the team. Daryl Morey wakes up today. Here's a pop quiz, everybody. Happier or sadder that fewer and fewer GMs want James Harden? Here's an answer. A spoiler alert, he's happier today. Now, why would a rival GM, the GM of another team, be happier? Is that because the price is going up on Harden, making it harder to trade for him, or because the price is going down, making it easier? Another spoiler here. It's because the price is going down, making it easier. Now, here's another question. Is that good or bad for Tillman, Fertitta, and the Rockets? If it's good for the Sixers, it's bad for the Rockets. That's a zero-sum game. It's bad for the Rockets. You see what I'm doing here? The longer they hold on to Harden, they think the deal's going to get better and better. It's going to get worse and worse. Now, I talked about this the other day on the air. You know how you're supposed to buy a used car or a car, period? You call up every dealer in the area. You say, I am going to call all the dealers in the area. You're one of them. These are the dealer, 20-mile radius, whatever. Where did I read this? Maybe Vox or one of these places. This is the technique. This is the theory, game theory, right? You say, I am going to call you all one time. Give me your best and final price right now, because I'm not calling back. I'm just going to go with the best one. Now, everyone, what the dealers will tell you, no, you know what? You come back to me when you say, no, it's not how I'm doing it. You know what's going to happen? They're all going to give you their best price, because this is their only shot. Right? So I understand the Rockets thinking the longer we hold on to him, the better deal we can drive. No. What the Rockets should be doing right now is telling the entire league, come with your best and final right now. We're dealing him to the team that makes us the best offer, period. Right now. The reason that would work right now is because if the longer you hold him, since demand will go down and you'll get less and less for him in a trade, the worse it is. Really, what the Rockets are saying is not we think he's going to become more and more valuable to us as a tradable asset. What they're saying is teams aren't giving us their best offer yet. Well, you got to put the screws to him. You got to put it to him. Best and final, today he's being traded. And you will get the best offer you will ever receive for James Harden. The offers will only get worse after this. 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. Can Aaron Rodgers steal the MVP from Patrick Mahomes? Or better yet, at this moment, if you ask me to predict who's going to win the MVP, I'll tell you Patrick Mahomes. I think he's a little bit better than Aaron Rodgers. But if I had to give out the MVP right now at this moment, I'd give it to Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers has a better completion percentage, a higher QBR, more touchdowns, and fewer interceptions on a team with fewer weapons. That means at this moment, he's the most valuable player. He just edged Mahomes because Mahomes is coming off, yeah, he threw for 393 yards, he threw three interceptions. Mahomes coming off a three-interception game. And it's close enough between Rodgers and Mahomes that when one guy has a good week and the other guy has a bad week, the guy with a good week edges ahead. Gianni, is that your name in Kentucky?
Yeah, that's my name.
Gianni, go ahead. Go ahead, Gianni, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
It's funny because me and a guy that I work with, we had this same talk about 3 weeks ago when Patrick Mahomes was had less interceptions than Aaron Rodgers at that time. And I said even then, I said, I agree with you, Aaron Rodgers should win MVP this year, being that he's doing almost. Then again, this was this discussion at that time.
Yep.
I said he's doing almost the same as Patrick Mahomes with 75% less weapons than Patrick Mahomes has.
Let's not overstate it. Devontae Adams is a bad dude. Let's not overstate it. But I hear what you're saying. I did not subscribe to that same argument a couple weeks ago. I thought Mahomes, when he had like 31 touchdowns and two interceptions, and his team had one loss on the season, and they avenged that loss, and he had the highest QBR, I'm like, okay, look, he's better. But once he loses those statistical edges, and you add the argument that Rodgers is doing it with less, then I think you're right. Like, if it's a dead heat, I think you go with Rodgers. Or if Rodgers certainly is ahead statistically, I think you go with Rodgers. But if Mahomes got the statistical edge in yards, touchdown to interception ratio, QBR, completion percentage, and team wins, then you go with Mahomes. That's not the case right now. He's got more team wins than Rodgers. He's on a better team. He's got more yards than Rodgers, but Rodgers has a higher QBR, a higher completion percentage, more touchdowns, and fewer interceptions. Rodgers has 39 touchdowns and 4 interceptions right now. Good Lord. 39 and 4. Richard in Manhattan, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, if Daniel Jones trots out and starts the game Sunday night for the Giants, it will be the stupidest thing I've ever seen in sports. Dumbest, stupidest thing. When Judge started him the other game, the game before against Arizona, that wasn't as bad. But then he kept him in after it was obvious to everyone in the world he wasn't effective, he wasn't himself. 25% of his game is running the ball, running around, putting pressure on the defense. He didn't do any of that. He couldn't do any of that. It was plain to see to anybody that
he was a dead duck, sitting duck.
He was inefficient, and for him to put him in that position again.
Richard, here's the real problem. I hear what you're saying. I don't think it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in sports, but I agree with you. It's not a good idea. But here's the problem. The bigger issue to me is this. Jones is a mobile quarterback, and that certainly helps him in his passing game, right? The threat of the run and his ability to move around. When you take the mobility away, shouldn't he still be okay? Like, shouldn't he still be better than Colt McCoy? He's not. That's what disturbs me. Like, his game has to, I understand it's predicated on speed, in fact, and the threat of speed. But he should be good enough that even if you take that away, he gives you a premium over the backup. He doesn't. Richard in Manhattan, he doesn't. And that's what bothers me.
Where that not only can he pass the ball, he can run the ball. That's a double threat. He loses all of that now the way he is.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, shouldn't he have been able to pass the ball? Shouldn't he be able to pass the ball even without the threat of the run?
There's no threat of the run.
That's what I'm saying. Shouldn't Richard, calm down. Richard, let's both calm down. Shouldn't Daniel Jones be good enough in the pocket that even without the threat of the run, he gives you a premium over your backup? He's not. We agree that he's not, but shouldn't he be? Like, hey, that's what bothers
me. This is a rookie. He's only played 1 year in total. 1 year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's not an accomplished quarterback. He can't get by on guile or savvy or experience.
That's a good point.
That's like putting a 38-year-old Eli Manning without any of his intelligence, without any Super Bowl resume, nothing. He'd be a sitting duck statue out there. No
good.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I'd rather go with Colt McCoy and take my chances.
Well, Richard makes a good point. Not only that, he'd rather go with Colt McCoy, so would I. But that, and the Giants really need this win because I don't think they're going to beat Baltimore. And I think they will beat the Cowboys, or at least they should. And so you're hoping Washington goes 1-2 and the Giants go 2-1 and Washington, and they wind up with the same record and Giants own the tiebreaker by virtue of the fact that they swept the, season series against Washington. But you got to beat the Browns, most likely. And I think the best point Richard made was, look, Daniel Jones is not a very experienced quarterback. So given that he's a second-year quarterback who hasn't started two full years' worth of games yet, you can forgive him for not being able to just beat you from the pocket when speed is a big part of his game. That's fair enough. Still makes me a little nervous. I feel like Daniel Jones should be better just from the pocket than he is right now. It's not like he hasn't started any games. He started all of last year, and he's been starting this year. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Richard just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Devin in Los Angeles, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, what's going on, Max Kells? It's always a pleasure to talk to you, brother. I got a quick NBA bone to pick with you. But if Aaron Rodgers is the MVP this season, then Aaron Rodgers should have been the MVP the last five seasons. I'm not an Aaron Rodgers guy. I'm a Cowboys fan. But the MVP this year is Derrick Henry, no doubt. The Tennessee Titans have a mediocre quarterback at best.
Tannehill's better than mediocre. Tannehill's better than mediocre. And if you see a running back with eye-popping numbers, it means he's getting run blocking. So why not give someone on the offensive line MVP? Like, the running back has the ball, so the fans give them the credit. But the fact is, run blocking turns a bad running back or an average running back into a Pro Bowler. So, but the fans don't respond to that because they don't see the offensive lineman running the ball. But this is why teams that draft running backs up high, like the Giants, like the Cowboys, are laughed at by the good teams. Right? Notice how the teams with the winning records don't draft running backs way up high. The teams that win Super Bowls don't draft running backs way up high. The closest anyone's come was the Rams with Todd Gurley. They drafted him, but they drafted him 9th or 10th because, remember, he was injured coming out of college. And guess what happened? They paid Todd Gurley early because he was the best running back in the game, and they regretted the contract. And right now the Cowboys regret the contract they handed Ezekiel Elliott. I don't think a running back can be MVP in the NFL.
Max, the podcast.
Bruce Arians says that, quote, I don't know why anyone criticizes Tom Brady. Why are they criticizing Tom Brady? What he did at the end of the half and to start the second half against Minnesota, very, very few teams can score 17 points in a matter of 5 or 6 minutes. If we finish the half with 17 points, I don't care how we start. He's not getting enough credit for what he's doing. I agree. I agree with Coach. And I don't think Coach has ever really been anti-Brady. I know the reports have come out that he didn't want Antonio Brown, and that was Brady's call, and he wants no risk it, no biscuit, shots down the field, and Brady wants to dink and dunk, and maybe there's some power struggle. And Arians has criticized Brady a couple times in the press, once even took it back. It turns out it wasn't Brady's fault when he did blame Brady after week one. But I've also pointed out every time Arians has pushed a button, it's worked. He criticized Brady, Brady responded. He defended Brady when Brady forgot how many downs there were in the game, it was the end of the game, and lied for Brady, and Brady responded. He was critical of Brady again, and Brady responded. Every time he's pushed a button, he's gotten the right response from Brady and the team. Now, why does Brady not deserve the criticism? Is Brady playing like an MVP? No. And I made the Cliff prediction, famously, in 2016, in the summer. I came out and said, Brady has 18 more months on the outside. Meaning 2016 and the 2017 season. And then he's going to fall off a cliff. I said he'll be a bum in short order. The next day I came out and apologized. I said, look, I don't want to call him a bum. I don't want a name call. I just mean he's going to be a jag, just a guy. He won't be elite anymore. He might still play in the NFL, but not at an elite level. Now, it turns out Brady beat the prediction by a year. He in 2016, he was great. 2017, he was great. And 2018, he was great. But in 2019, he wasn't. And by the way, in 2018, was he still great? They won the Super Bowl. It was the lowest scoring Super Bowl of all time. And he really rode the defense in the running game, but still he was excellent. I wouldn't say he was one of the two or three best players in football, but he was excellent. So it was more of a ravine than a cliff. Kind of he was declining, but not just like flying high like Brett Favre and Peyton Manning did and then just straight down, right? He's the MVP. He can do this till he's 50, and then all of a sudden they're not in the league. It wasn't that. It was more of a decline. It may have even been considered a steep decline, but it wasn't falling off a cliff. He went from 2016 and 17 elite, 2018 still really good. 2019, last year with the Patriots, he was league average, maybe a tick above, maybe, because I'll give him name brand recognition. But the main thing is his team won 12 games, and I'm for that. Like, I believe in team record for quarterbacks. I think it means something. Just like wins for pitchers in this era doesn't mean so much, but once upon a time, wins were pretty well correlated with the quality of a pitcher. Remember in 1980, Steve Stone on the Orioles won 25 games. I think he won the Cy Young. He shouldn't have that year. And he wasn't as good as even guys on his own staff. So it could be misleading. But he was a quality pitcher. If you won a lot of games, it meant you were pretty good when pitchers pitch deep into games. And quarterbacks play the whole game, and they have the biggest influence on the outcome of any player. And other than the coach, they're the most important person in the franchise. And if you notice, great quarterbacks almost always have good one-loss records. So why is that, right? And certainly great quarterback coach combinations are almost always winning teams. So the fact that Brady won 12 games last year was big for me, but the fact is when you watched him play a lot of dinking and dunking, and when he had to beat Miami last game of the season to get a bye in the first round, he couldn't. And when they had to beat Tennessee in the first round, they couldn't. Right? And that has to do with quarterback play. He was missing receivers, short, long, left, right, every way you could miss a receiver. And I was told it's because he didn't have any weapons on his team. Okay, that obviously affects you if your receivers aren't great. But the Bucs receivers are great. And going to the Bucs, everyone knew Brady should look better than he did the year before on a bad offensive team. Even if he was in decline, that would be offset and then some by a superior team. And guess what Las Vegas said? Vegas pegged the odds, the over-under, for wins at 9.5, which is exactly where I thought, intuitively. Like, as soon as I heard, yep, 9. Like, in other words, if you took the under, you thought the Bucks would win 9 games. If you took the over, you thought 10. And a lot of people said 11 or 12. Oh, my God, they're going to win the Super Bowl. The Bucks are on pace to win 10 or 11 games. Right? They're on pace to do 8-5. They're on pace to get the over. Not by the crazy starry-eyed fans' point of view or the overzealous members of the media, but by sober analysis before the season. Like the odds makers whose job depends on setting the right line and the public who bet it, right? The wisdom of crowds, where if everyone shares public information and also has some private information, who's this, Sirowicki, the wisdom of crowds, in response to the madness of crowds? That group will always outperform the smartest member of the group in terms of predictions. It's why the stock market works. It's why the line is so hard to beat in the NFL, the spread, because it reflects the wisdom of crowds. But that line is set by the odds maker, and he don't want that line moving too much. Sober analysis said, if you like the over, 10 wins. If you're really high on them, maybe 11. And that's where they're headed. So why is Brady getting criticized? I'll tell you why. Because of the starry-eyed fans and boosters in the media who were like, they're going to win 12-plus games in the Super Bowl. Who, you really thought that? You're overrating Tom Brady to start the season. So now you're underrating him at this point. But if you actually knew how to rate him, like me. Boy, that takes a lot of nerve, doesn't it, Raj? If you really knew how to rate Tom Brady, then you're impressed right now. Father Time is undefeated. The one dude I once saw almost fight him to a draw was Bernard Hopkins, great middleweight champ, light heavyweight champ. And Bernard was beating world-class fighters when he was 49 years old. But when he turned 50, Joe Smith knocked him clean out the ring. KO. Father time, even Hopkins couldn't fight him to a draw. He's undefeated. Tom Brady's 43 years old. If your expectations going into the season for a declining 43-year-old quarterback was that he was going to be an MVP, then yeah, you're going to criticize him now. If, however, you had more sober expectations, it's a new team, it's a new system, it's a coach that doesn't exactly fit with his philosophy with Brady, it's all new receivers he's throwing to, we're in a pandemic, you don't get to practice with the team, teams are getting shut down because of COVID, right? Like all these things, you would say, well, Brady's on pace for a 3-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio, give or take. He's on pace for 10 wins, maybe 11. It's a hell of a season. Brady's having a hell of a season for a 43-year-old quarterback. By the standards of all quarterbacks, he's a tick above average starter. He's better than your average starter. He's still a good player. And that is really saying something. All depends on how you look at it, what your expectations were. And if they were realistic, you shouldn't be criticizing Brady right now. 888-SAY-ESPN. Last take. That's your take. Coming up next.
Max, the podcast.
Mitch in Jersey, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Max, I think the Rams got the best defense, and I think they got the best set of tight ends and wide receivers. I think they can represent the MC conference.
I agree. I think the Rams could be in the Super Bowl. It's possible because Goff has been around the block. He spreads the ball around. And when he's at his best, he looks like a really good quarterback. But even so, he's not worse than an average one. He's above average. And they have a defense with talent on it that really can't be matched except by the Bears. So when you add it up, and a real good coach, I don't love them because I don't like Goff as much as I like Aaron Rodgers. And I don't like the Rams team because of that as quite as much as I like the Saints. And I like Russell Wilson to pull some magic, you know, in the playoffs maybe. But the Rams, could I see the Rams in the Super Bowl? Yeah, for sure. Especially, imagine if the Saints have to go to Lambeau, although they wouldn't have to go until the NFC Championship game, so scratch that. Frank in Florida, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. Hey, dude, can Giants fan actually be excited about next season? You know, Daniel Jones fully fit, Barkley's back. Are the Giants any good next season?
Yeah, they might be. They really might be. I am a Giants fan, and I'm excited about next season. Like, look, they can make the playoffs this year, and they'd be live in a first round of the playoffs, depending on the opponent. But it's not about this year. They don't have Saquon right now. And Saquon, even if you shouldn't have drafted him second because he's a running back, Saquon's probably the best home run threat in football. You know, respect to Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara and Christian McCaffrey if he's healthy and Tyreek Hill. I mentioned a bunch of backs, but you could almost run Tyreek Hill out of the backfield, like, you know, on plays and on gadget plays and stuff. And certainly as a receiver, he's just impossible. But if you wanted me to say who's the number one home run threat, like from anywhere on the field, this man can score, Saquon Barkley. You might have two or three guys in the vicinity. He dekes them all. He could jump over literally another dude's head, turn on the burners, and be out. And you can run, he can run between the tackles. I know people are like, well, he doesn't run between the tackles, too much fancy stuff like Barry Sanders. Yeah, I guess if the criticism is like he's too much like Barry Sanders, except he's 235 pounds and he can catch passes. Yeah, I guess that tells you what you need to know. What's the opposite of damning with faint praise? Because he's getting great praise while he's being criticized. There should be an expression for that. Raj has a stumped look on his face right now. I can see on... He doesn't know.
More callers. Take the calls.
Clinton Dallas, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, appreciate you taking the call. Lifelong Denver Broncos fan, going back to the days of Craig Morton. Love John Elway as a quarterback. Hate John Elway in football operations and believe he is preventing the Broncos from going to another Super Bowl or maybe even another playoff appearance as long as he continues to do what
he does. I got to say, though, Clint, let me tell you something about – okay, I'll say this about Elway. I used to think he was an excellent executive. He got to the Super Bowl two different ways, right? One, with an offense built around Peyton Manning. And when that didn't work, Peyton was a shell of himself with 9 touchdowns to 17 interceptions. He was done, cooked. He and Osweiler were splitting games, basically, right? But in the end, Peyton was the one who won behind the defense. He totally remade the team from an offense with no defense to a defense with no offense. And even before that, you know, won a playoff game with Tim Tebow. Like, Elway, I saw a mix, but he hasn't been good recently. Elway's problem, ironically, is he can't develop a quarterback. He can't. Elway, who's one of the all-time great quarterbacks, can't develop a quarterback. Elway's stock has fallen as, like, analytics get more advanced. You know, they're not capturing his value quite. And because he won his 2 Super Bowls when he was no longer at his best behind a great running game, he's through the years been devalued a little. But all I can say is, after his career was over, Elway was in the conversation for GOAT. He was. And he's still a top 10 all-time quarterback, I think. Josiah is how it's written in Ohio. Is that how you say it?
Josiah.
What's up, yep. Josiah?
So, none much. So, a couple questions. If Joe Burrow didn't get injured and continue to play up in the entire season, do you see him being Rookie of the Year? Mm. And Errol Spence, who do you have him going up against next? And at least next opponent, do you see Sean Porter or another big name? And Gervonta Davis, he's okay in my opinion, but I feel like his name has kind of been tarnished because he's taken the Floyd Mayweather approach without really making a name for himself, in my opinion.
Well, Tank Davis is an attraction. You know, he gets announced at Ravens games, and he puts 14,000 fans in the stands, and he fought pay-per-view and scored the knockout of the year. He's a spectacular fighter, but he's vulnerable, which should make his fights even more interesting. And I agree, he needs to step up and not just fight name guys who bring an audience, but fight a guy who people believe can beat him. What was the other question? There was more. I don't know. There were 3 questions. One of them was, I don't even remember anymore. Raiders and Chargers going at it tonight. Got NFL whip around tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.